Hello, ahlan wa sahlan, and welcome to another episode of Arab Voices, a syndicated radio talk show on dozens of radio stations in the US and Europe since 2002. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. A programming note to our listeners in the greater Houston area, KPFT made a decision to move Arab Voices from 90.1 FM to KPFT HD2 channel, beginning with this episode, episode number 1179. So if you search for Arab Voices, you will not find us on the 90.1 FM channel, but again, we are now on KPFT HD2 channel, a digital broadcast that is accessible from HD-equipped radios, live-streamed on the web at kpft.org, and now you can listen to us live with the new KPFT mobile app in the App Store. Of course, all of Arab Voices shows are archived on our website, arabvoices.net, for on-demand listening. You will also find a partial list of dozens of radio stations that syndicate Arab Voices at arabvoices.net. During this episode of Arab Voices, episode number 1179, I will continue to highlight the ongoing Israeli genocide, slaughter, war crimes, forced starvation, atrocities, destruction, and ethnic cleansing in occupied Palestine, including Gaza, ignored by the corporate media. We will listen to the Electronic Intifada newscast, a summary of the latest developments in occupied Palestine, presented by Noura Burrows-Friedman, Associate Editor at the Electronic Intifada. During the second segment, I will air some of the opening and closing remarks, including the official closing statement, delivered at the Global Alliance for Palestine inaugural conference held recently in London. I will air the remarks of Dr. Mustafa Barghouti from Palestine and Deputy Angelo Bonelli from Italy. Let's begin with the latest Electronic Intifada newscast, a summary of the latest developments in occupied Palestine, presented by Noura Burrows-Friedman, Associate Editor at the Electronic Intifada.
This is the Electronic Intifada newscast. I'm Noura Burrows-Friedman, Associate Editor at the Electronic Intifada. It's day 685 of Israel's genocide in Gaza. Here's a brief summary of some of the latest developments this week in Palestine. Israel has killed at least 400 Palestinians and injured nearly 2,700 between August 13th and August 20th, according to official records from the Ministry of Health in Gaza. The Israeli army has been obliterating entire city blocks in Gaza City and other areas in northern Gaza, as Palestinian children, men, and women starve to death, and as Israeli forces and American mercenaries continue to trap and kill starving Palestinians seeking meager amounts of food. According to the health ministry, 22 people were killed and 49 were injured at so-called aid distribution sites on Wednesday alone, bringing the total recorded number to 2,018 killed and 14,950 injured since May 27th, when the U.S.-led Gaza Humanitarian Foundation began its lethal operations. As part of its intention to fully invade, occupy, and destroy Gaza City, the Israeli army has intensified its attacks on Al-Zaytun neighborhood, with continuous airstrikes, artillery shelling, and gunfire. These attacks have resulted in the mass slaughter of Palestinian families and massive destruction of buildings and public facilities, the United Nations High Commission for Human Rights stated on Wednesday. The commission added that, quote, hundreds of families have been forced to flee, including many children, people with disabilities, and older people with nowhere safe to go amid dire humanitarian conditions, while others reportedly remain trapped, completely cut off from food, water, and medicine supplies. Over 2 weeks, the UN recorded at least 54 attacks on residential buildings and entire blocks in Gaza City, killing entire families in airstrikes and shelling. Attacks were also recorded on shelters of forcibly displaced people, including tents and schools. These figures, the UN says, quote, represent only a portion of the true toll due to underreporting in such dire circumstances. They indicate that the systematic destruction of Gaza City is already underway. Euromed Human Rights Monitor has reported that Israeli occupation forces have been using remote-controlled vehicles packed with explosives to destroy buildings in Al-Zaytun in order to force Palestinians out of their homes and shelters. The army has flattened approximately 400 homes with explosive-laden robots and aerial bombardment, Euromed stated. quote, this wide-scale military operation mirrors similar assaults in Rafah, Khan Yunis, and northern Gaza, aimed at obliterating entire communities and forcibly displacing all who remain. Launched on August 11th, the operation represents Israel's ongoing push to assume total and unlawful control over Gaza City. The intent is to evacuate long-standing residents and up to 1 million displaced individuals, most having fled northern Gaza, and confine them to isolated, small areas in the south. Drones, specifically quadcopters, are being deployed to encircle residential blocks and coerce civilians into fleeing under armed threat, the human rights group adds. Maha Husseini, a researcher with Euromed, stated on August 17th that, quote, Israel managed to exterminate most of Gaza's journalists. Today, it is carrying out an obliteration campaign against Gaza's largest neighborhood, Zeytun, under almost no media coverage. The Palestinian Civil Defense warned this week that their rescue workers are unable to reach or treat the dead and wounded in El Zeytun, and the residents of Gaza City have nowhere else to go. Approximately 50,000 Palestinians are in El Zeytun, and rescuers can't protect its residents as Israeli forces annihilate the city. Quote, we are living under extremely harsh conditions in Gaza City with no means of survival. The people of Gaza have no option left but death, the spokesperson for the civil defense stated. That was in El Zeytun, Gaza City, this week. Other areas in Gaza City and northern Gaza have been destroyed in escalating Israeli attacks. In the Tufah neighborhood on August 17th, reporter Mahmoud Al-Awaidia documented the widespread devastation left behind by the Israeli army. Quote, there is massive destruction as far as the eye can see, he says, as the camera pans around an entire landscape of rubble, including the remains, he says, of the Al-Mahatta Mosque. As Israel's mass destruction of Gaza City accelerates, so does its policies of forced displacement and expulsion. Satellite images released this week show the emptying of tent shelters, at least 132 buildings destroyed, and 58 Israeli military vehicles, including 17 bulldozers, moving into the city, Sky News reported. Al Jazeera English's Hani Mahmoud said on Wednesday that, quote, more people are now receiving phone calls from the Israeli military warning them not to be in areas where they've lived all their lives and threatening them that they're going to be in the line of fire if they stay in these areas, asking them to leave as soon as possible, giving them just a little window of time. People are leaving behind their belongings, he said, including whatever food supplies they managed to obtain in the past few weeks. Tariq Abu Azoum, also with Al Jazeera, said on August 19th that, quote, there has been a huge focus by the Israeli army on targeting the eastern portions of Gaza City, destroying the civilian infrastructure and dismantling the civilian fabric there. Some families have moved to other parts of Gaza and started to set up tents close to the coast. There are also huge portions of Gaza City residents determined to live close to their communities and homes, even as attacks continue to unfold in other parts of the Gaza Strip. Our contributor, Asim Al-Nabih, who is also the spokesperson for the Gaza municipality in Gaza City, posted to social media that, quote, the idea of losing Gaza forever has driven people here to madness. They would rather die than be torn from it. They would rather be killed literally on Gaza's land than see our city turned into nothing more than a memory. We are the ones who know this city best. We are its people, its children, its lovers, its rightful keepers. We have carried its stones in our hands, breathed its sea breeze, felt both its tenderness and its harshness. We have lived its beauty, its longing, its wounds. No one belongs to Gaza more than we do. So leave us, just leave it to us. Let us be the ones to grieve it. Let us be the ones to weep for its martyrs. But leave us here, just leave us here. That was from Asim Al-Nabih, writing from Gaza City. Meanwhile, Western and regional states continue to send lethal airdropped parcels of food aid instead of forcing Israel to open the crossings to the thousands of aid trucks that remain blocked or, at best, trickled in. On August 17th, an airdropped aid package killed an elderly Palestinian man in southern Gaza. Sabr al-Zamili, 75 years old, was inside a tent when the package fell directly on him, according to his family. He was preparing to head to the mosque for his daily prayers, his son told the publication Middle East Eye, and his daughter Sarah said his body was retrieved from beneath the package with severe injuries. Quote, his entire body was broken, she said. The United Nations reported this week that only 47% of the 2,000 metric tons of food supplies required daily to meet basic humanitarian food assistance needs has been allowed to enter Gaza. Starvation in Gaza is at the worst level since October 2023, and what has entered is insufficient to meet even the minimum caloric intake needs, the UN stated. Included in the limited quantities of food are mainly dry goods. However, the risk of spoilage and infestation of food supplies has drastically increased due to being stranded for months, heat, and impending expiration dates. Furthermore, the UN notes, cooking gas has not entered Gaza for over 5 months, and firewood has become increasingly unaffordable, forcing many to use waste and scrap wood as alternative cooking sources, exacerbating health and environmental risks. Since the beginning of August, the Children's Fund UNICEF says it was able to deliver limited amounts of therapeutic food for acutely malnourished children, as well as infant formula for just 1,200 babies. But children and adults alike are continuing to die of starvation. Since March, nearly 100,000 children have been under the age of five have been screened by UNRWA, the UN Agency for Palestine Refugees. This week, UNRWA reported that in less than 6 months, child malnutrition has tripled across the Gaza Strip. And in Gaza City, nearly one in every three children is now malnourished, six times higher than before Israel broke the so-called ceasefire in mid-March. The Gaza Government Media Office stated on August 17th that the ongoing prevention of allowing meat, fish, dairy products, fresh produce, and other basic foods is part of its policy of deliberate starvation. Quote, even if a few trucks enter in very limited quantities, the occupation deliberately leaves these trucks vulnerable to looting by its affiliates, prevents their safe arrival to those entitled to them, and even kills anyone who attempts to secure these trucks, the media office said. On Wednesday, August 20th, the Palestinian Health Ministry in Gaza recorded three new deaths from starvation and malnutrition, bringing the total number to 269 recorded deaths by starvation, including 112 children. Speaking to the Electronic Intifada podcast this week, Dr. Tha'er Ahmed explained that forced and sustained starvation is shaving years off of Palestinians' lives, especially children whose cognitive and growth development is dependent on good nutrition in their earliest stages. Quote, every day that passes that they are under these conditions of malnourishment, especially the severe ones, you are gambling with their future. They have cognitive issues that will develop as a result of this that will be irreversible, Ahmed noted. Children's immune systems will be irrevocably weaker, he says, adding that children will have shorter statures and developmental delays, not reaching the classic milestones that we see kids reach, even crawling and then walking, or then speaking. All of these things get delayed, he says. They get pushed back because of what's being inflicted on them. For more, watch or listen to What Does Israel's Starvation of Gaza Do to the Human Body on electronicintifada.net. Israeli and American mercenary forces operating the private so-called Gaza Humanitarian Foundation sites continue to trap, injure, and kill starving Palestinians, including children, every day. Defense for Children International Palestine released a report this week documenting two separate incidents in July, where Palestinian children were shot and injured by the Israeli military while trying to obtain food from aid distribution areas as part of Israel's ongoing genocidal campaign against Palestinians. 15-year-old Mohammed Al-Hueti told the children's rights group, quote, while I was in the waiting area by Wadi Gaza Bridge, we were monitored by an Israeli quadcopter. We waited there for half an hour for the aid delivery gate to open. As soon as the gate opened, we rushed towards the gate when five Israeli tanks appeared and opened fire directly at us, resulting in numerous martyrs and injuries. I am an orphan, having lost both my parents. I have to go to the American aid point in Netzarim to obtain food for my eight siblings and myself, Mohammed said. DCIP says that Israeli forces targeted a group of starving Palestinians on July 27, 2025, while they made their way to the U.S.-registered Gaza Humanitarian Foundation aid station at the Netzarim corridor in central Gaza to collect food and supplies. This tragic incident led to the loss of 18 lives, including 2 children, and left 10 others injured, also including 2 children, among them Muhammad. He says, quote, "I was struck in the head by an expanding bullet. For an hour, I remained under fire from the Israeli army, bleeding profusely. The aid gate finally opened at 11:30 a.m. After that, I crawled and stumbled, barely conscious, until I reached the Nuseirat intersection," Muhammad added. The Center for Constitutional Rights in New York, meanwhile, filed a lawsuit seeking records from the Trump administration over its funding of the private U.S.-registered Gaza Humanitarian Foundation. The lawsuit comes on the heels of the legal group's official notification in June to the GHF, warning of its potential legal liability for complicity in Israel's war crimes, crimes against humanity, and genocide against Palestinians. The lawsuit also follows the Trump administration's failure to comply with the Freedom of Information Act, or FOIA, request submitted last month. The lawsuit, filed on August 20th, seeks records that could shed light on not only the decision-making process behind the $30 million grant it received from the USAID, which was approved by the U.S. State Department, but also on the creation of GHF, its funding, and how it plans to use the grant. The Center for Constitutional Rights says it is particularly interested in information that could reveal whether the administration's distribution of funds has any links to President Trump's Gaza Riviera plan, which would cleanse the area of Palestinians and redevelop it for investors. Quote, GHF's militarized aid distribution model, which it designed in close coordination with the Israeli occupying power, is more suited to furthering the genocide than to providing much-needed humanitarian relief to a starved Palestinian population, said Ayla Kadah, attorney and justice fellow at the Center for Constitutional Rights. Rather than take action to prevent GHF's ongoing contribution to war crimes, the U.S. government has provided it with a $30 million grant, bypassing even its baseline vetting processes. This shocks the conscience, and Americans deserve to know how their taxpayer dollars are being used to further this dangerous dimension of Israel's genocidal project. Israel attacked a hospital again this week as laboratories and clinics face a steady decrease in basic supplies. On Friday, August 15th, the Israeli army bombed Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital in Deir al-Balah, killing 2 Palestinians. The Gaza government media office said that the attack targeted a tent for displaced people within the walls of the hospital's courtyard near the outpatient clinic. It was the 13th time since the beginning of the genocide that the hospital was bombed. At Nasser Medical Complex in Khan Yunis, sewage overflowed into clinics on August 14th, forcing the hospital to temporarily stop its services. Dr. Atef Al-Hout, the hospital's director, stated that the flooding could not be fixed without coordination with Israel, as the source of the sewage leak is located in a no-go zone designated by the Israeli military and closed to Palestinians. Because of the 22 months of widespread destruction of infrastructure to sewage lines and pumps, doctors say that waterborne diseases are skyrocketing. Dr. Munir Al-Bursh, the director general of the health ministry in Gaza, said that around 170 patients every day are brought into Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital with the parasitic infection Giardia as a result of people resorting to drinking contaminated water, especially as the summer temperatures rise. Al-Bursh also said this week that hospital beds are at 300% occupancy, quote, an unprecedented figure that reflects the scale of the health and humanitarian catastrophe we are experiencing today. Compounding the health crisis, the health ministry reported this week that 49% of laboratory testing materials are completely out of stock. 51% of laboratory consumables and supplies are out of stock. Many basic tests in operating rooms and intensive care units have run out or are about to run out. Most of the materials needed to check blood levels for patients who have undergone kidney and liver transplants have run out. Complete blood count or CBC testing materials, which are the basic test for visitors to healthcare facilities, are about to run out, and what is available is sufficient for only a limited number of days. Materials for testing blood units for viral infections are sufficient for only a few more days as well, posing a risk of unsafe blood transfusions. Blood bags and blood transfusion kits are only sufficient for less than a month from now, and approximately 45% of laboratory equipment has been damaged or destroyed, and requires maintenance and spare parts. A journalist was killed this week, Islam El-Khomi, who worked as a reporter and content creator for different media platforms, was killed along with his son when Israel bombed their tent in Gaza City on August 19th. The Gaza government media office said that with El-Khomi's killing, the number of journalists and media workers murdered since October 2023 has risen to 239. Following the hunting and targeted assassinations by the Israeli military of six reporters on August 10th, including Anas al-Sharif and Mohammed Kureika, Gaza journalist Saleh al-Jafarawi is now being threatened by Israel. On August 14th, al-Jafarawi said that the spokesperson for the Israeli army, Avichai Adrai, along with other military and Hebrew media figures, has put a target on his back. Quote, "You either live as you want or you live as they want," he says. "You live with your head held up high, broadcasting both audio and video. We will not kneel to them, God willing. I won't hide from you. Saleh might be the next martyr, or it could be one of my colleagues who will be the next martyr. We could all be subjected to what Anas and our colleagues were subjected to," he said. We've published many features on the Electronic Intifada in the last week, but we wanted to highlight I Envy My Dead Best Friend by journalist and English graduate Khaled Al-Kershali, writing from Gaza City. Khaled writes about his best friend, Mohammed Hammo, who was killed by Israel in November 2023. Hammo was a contributor to the Electronic Intifada. Quote, "My tears for Mohammed have decreased recently. I stopped worrying for him, not because my grief has lessened or because I feel any relief at his absence or because my love for him has faded, but I stopped worrying simply because I know with certainty that Mohammed is in a better place. I even feel jealous of him, may he rest in peace, and I wish I was him. Mohammed was not displaced several times or forced to cook over a wood fire, surviving on scant amounts of water and sleeping without a blanket. He had not gone to the Netzarim or Rafah aid distribution points, where hundreds of starving people seeking food have been killed by the Israeli army. He did not wait hours for a bag of flour at an aid site only to get nothing. He did not go to bed hungry for days, feeling himself starved to death. He was not forced to drink salty or contaminated water. He was not left to wander with nowhere to shelter. I consider Mohammed to be the luckiest, as he did not spend the last 2 years of his life in fear as bombs shook the ground beneath him. He did not have to mourn and bury his loved ones one by one until none were left. Mohammed himself was never buried. His body still lies beneath the rubble, with no grave I can visit, even if the war were to end. But I visit him every day. He is always with me, alive in my mind. And as long as we, his friends, remember him, Mohammed will live on." Those are excerpts from I Envy My Dead Best Friend by Khaled Al-Kershali, writing from Gaza on electronicintifada.net. And finally, as we always do, we wanted to highlight people expressing joy, determination, and resilience across Palestine. 2 days before his brother Mohammed was killed with Anas al-Sharif in Gaza City, photographer Ibrahim Nofal filmed a group of music students practicing their instruments in a tent shelter. He says, quote, "In a place drowning in grief, Gaza's children have chosen music as a form of therapy and a symbol of resilience. Between the tents and in the middle of war, it's crazy, right? We're dying. We sacrifice martyrs, dying of hunger. Life is almost non-existent, but there are people with hope in art, in something very beautiful that happens in the tents. This is the music school among the tents. Students learn the oud, the flute, the tabla, and the guitar. This is real resilience," he says.
إشي جنوني صح إحنا بنموت نقدم شهداء ميتين من الجوع الحياة معدومة تقريبا ولكن في ناس لسه في عندها أمل في فن في إشي كثير جميل بيصير بين الخيام.
And a group of kids were filmed playing with a parachute that was dropped with food parcels over Gaza. Ahmed Al-Kilani, a photographer who captured the scene, said, quote, "Gaza kids turn a parachute into joy, simple happiness despite the pain." And that's it for the news roundup. As always, go to electronicintifada.net for much more, especially to read our new features by our brave writers in Gaza. You've been listening to the Electronic Intifada's newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman. Want to hear more? Check out our live stream with interviews, reports, and analysis, along with print articles, podcasts, and more at electronicintifada.net. Produced by Nora Barrows-Friedman, Tamara Nassar, and Pierre Loisel.
You're listening to Arab Voices, a syndicated radio talk show on dozens of radio stations in the US and Europe since 2002. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. In a historic gathering on July 26, 2025, the Global Alliance for Palestine held its inaugural conference in London, bringing together delegates from 25 countries representing grassroots solidarity movements and campaigns, as well as political and community leaders from around the world. The Global Alliance for Palestine is an international popular front bringing together voices of conscience from across the world to defend Palestinian rights, challenge systems of oppression, and build coordinated global pressure to end Israel's illegal occupation, apartheid, and settler colonialism. According to the organizers, the launch of the Global Alliance for Palestine comes at a critical and urgent moment as Israel intensifies its genocidal actions and starvation tactics against the people of Gaza. In response, the alliance will serve as a central coordinating body, bringing together global efforts, building unity to confront Israel's atrocities and advance the cause of Palestinian self-determination. There were several speakers at that conference, and I am going to share some of them now. Let's start with the opening remarks of Dr. Mustafa Barghouti, Palestinian physician, activist, Secretary General and co-founder of the Palestinian National Initiative, a member of the Palestinian Legislative Council, and president of the Union of Palestinian Medical Relief Committees.
Thank you for the invitation. And I want to really start by thanking all of you for everything you've been doing for Palestine. And I'm speaking to you on behalf of the Palestinian people, thanking you for your solidarity, thanking you for your support, thanking you for caring about Palestine. I want to thank you, every representative from each country and from the world. And I want to thank the preparatory committee for this very good preparation, for the what we hope will become a powerful global alliance for Palestine, unifying and uniting all solidarity efforts worldwide. I want especially to thank all my colleagues in the steering committee that are here. They're all very close friends, but especially I want to thank Jeremy Corbyn for his commitment. And he allowed me to announce to you today that his new party, which is called yourparty.uk, has just gotten 393,000 new members. So, congratulations, Jeremy. I think that is the real response to those who conspired against you while you were in the Labour Party, and those who accused you of anti-Semitism, who themselves are the provocators of anti-Semitism worldwide. Thank you for the introduction, although I myself feel hesitant about being on the same list of nominees for Nobel Peace Prize with a person like Donald Trump. You know. I don't need to remind you of the crimes in Palestine. I don't need to remind you of the horrible situation our people live in, especially the horrible crimes against our people now in Gaza. But I have to mention that what is happening now is three war crimes in parallel. The war crime of genocide, which has killed already, I think if we count all the people who were killed by bombardment and by diseases and by preventing medical care, it could reach 100,000 people. But also suffering from terrible collective punishment and the horrible man-made starvation, which is unprecedented in human history. But in addition to that, the act of ethnic cleansing that is going on around the clock. It is not easy to forget that at least 110,000 tons of explosives have been thrown on Gaza. that little place. It's about 56 kilograms of explosives for each man, woman, and child in Gaza. 51,000 children have already died or were injured. While we talk, every 17 minutes, a new child in Gaza is killed or injured. And there are 70,000 children who are just at the edge of death now while we are speaking because of starvation. UNICEF has just announced that one third of all people in Gaza, including children, did not eat for the last 48 hours. And a destruction that has already destroyed more than 92% of all homes or structures. It's killing by bombardment, killing by starvation, killing by a biological warfare. Our medical teams, and we have 80 of them now working in Gaza, treating about 200,000 people every month, tell us that there are already 115,000 cases of infectious hepatitis, and that every person in Gaza, including our medical doctors, are getting sick three times a month at least. And now with this starvation, their immunity will go down drastically. They kill people with chemical pollution. Of course, all these bombs, much of which are with depleted uranium, will cause terrible long-term effect, including very huge number of cancer cases. And yet, the American president is encouraging the fascist Netanyahu and his fascist governments to proceed with the killing, with the destruction, and with the ethnic cleansing. What does he mean when he said yesterday, what did the president mean, President Trump meant when he said that the Palestinians know what will happen after they hand over all their captives? What will happen? Israel will continue the war and continue the ethnic cleansing of all of Gaza. That's what he meant. And that's how it should be perceived. And that's the risk we are living in. But it's not only Gaza. West Bank also is subjected to terrible, horrible terrorist acts and attacks by the illegal settlers, terrorist groups. And you heard just what happened the last 3 days when the Israeli Knesset again decided with 71 votes against only 3 Jewish votes to annex the West Bank. It's not just the government. It's also the Israeli Zionist opposition that are participating in that. Only 10 Arab members of the Knesset voted against it, and only three Jewish members. Many of the so-called opposition parties left the Knesset not to vote against this terrible decision of annexation. So the picture is clear. It's a fascist tendency. It's a fascism in the worst possible way since Second World War. We've never seen anything like that anywhere in the world, including this terrible starvation that everybody is trying to, has to see, and everybody has to take actions against. The message I want to convey to you, I don't want to be long, but I have to say that. The message I want to convey to you, that the Palestinian people, all the Palestinians, are facing now existential threat. That the Israeli plan is a total annihilation of the Palestinian people. That's the kind of risk we are facing today. It's much worse than Kosovo. It's much worse than any other place in modern history. And this fact that we are facing the risk and of annihilation has happened only because Israel was allowed to kill international law. And because international law and international humanitarian law died on the land of Gaza during these Israeli attacks. So what we face here, what you face here with us as solidarity people, is not just the responsibility of being in solidarity with a just cause. No, it's more than that. What you face today, what you encounter today, is historical responsibility of the whole humanity, to save the Palestinian people from this act of ethnic cleansing and annihilation. And let me be frank with you. The burden of confronting this horrible risk cannot be left only to the Palestinian people in Gaza or in the West Bank. That is not acceptable. Of every Palestinian everywhere in the world has the responsibility of standing up now and confronting this. But every human being, every person that believes in humanity has now the responsibility of standing up, because there are two things only that will stop this horrible thing from taking place. Two things only that will stop this genocide. The Palestinian resistance on the ground in every possible way, and the international solidarity movement with true sanctions imposed on Israel. What we need is a true movement immediately to impose sanctions on the fascist Israeli system, to confront the Israeli lobby everywhere in the world, and to be effective in exercising pressure on governments and on policies of different countries. Like what we've heard today, that 221 members of the British Parliament demanded from Mr. Starmer that there should be recognition of Palestine. Half of them are, by the way, from the Labour Party, but he's not listening. And I think that kind of pressure should be enhanced. The big question is for all of us today, and I will soon end, the big question is how to make our movement more effective, how to have the largest possible impact. We are not at a stage where we have to think about activities, about input, about output. We have to think about impact, how we can be impactful, how we can stop this terrible genocide. And that requires, in my opinion, five things. First of all, meticulous organization. Our enemy is strong because it's very organized. Meticulous organization, excellent coordination, and unity of actions. That's first. Second, an effective communication strategy to undermine the other narrative and to present the true narrative, the objective narrative about what's happening. And third, a very wide network of activities. And fourth, to attract the utmost possible number of young people and give them leadership positions in this movement. And fifth, to create a powerful public lobby pressuring different governments, including the government of the United States. We have to take into consideration that we have to repeat what happened in South Africa, considering also the difference in situation. It's much worse today in Palestine than it was in South Africa. How did we bring down apartheid system in South Africa? That's something we have to repeat, but also considering the fact that what Palestinians face now is not just discrimination. They are facing, as I told you, annihilation of a whole nation. And before that, before everything, we have two immediate tasks. Immediately, now, we have to think about what we can do now to stop the starvation of people in Gaza and the starvation of children. We have to stop this terrible genocide when Israel and the United States of America are declaring that their intention to continue the war. There is no time to waste. The issue is absolutely urgent, because the children of Gaza do not have the luxury of waiting. With the passage of every minute, more children will die. Thank you so much.
That was Dr. Mustafa Barghouti, Palestinian physician, activist, secretary general, and co-founder of the Palestinian National Initiative, a member of the Palestinian Legislative Council, and president of the Union of Palestinian Medical Relief Committees, delivering his opening remarks at the Global Alliance for Palestine inaugural conference held recently in London. Deputy Angelo Bonelli from Italy also delivered some opening remarks. Let's listen in.
Thank you very much for your invitation. I'm very glad to be here. While witnessing the ongoing massacre of human beings, the current genocide in Gaza, we have a moral duty to mobilize and to awaken the conscience of international public opinion. Our governments, and I'm speaking specifically of the Italian government, are complicit in the ethnic cleansing and in the crimes against humanity currently taking place in Gaza. There is an acceptable double standard on the part of European governments and the United States. On one hand, they sanction Russia for violating international law. And on the other, they remain silent, not only refusing to sanction those who are killing civilians, women, and children, like the criminal Benjamin Netanyahu, but even going so far as to accuse those who protest against these massacres of being anti-Semitic. In the United States, universities are being suppressed. In Europe, demonstrating for Palestine is no simple matter, as if defending the lives of Palestinians is like a crime. Since May, more than 1,000 people have been killed by Israeli bombs and bullets for asking for food and water. 1 year ago, I was at the Rafah crossing, trying to bring food and migrant aid trucks together with other members of parliament, all from the opposition party. A doctor, through tears, told us how he had to perform amputation without anesthesia amidst the scream of pain. A few days later, I went to Cairo, to the Italian hospital in Cairo, where some Palestinian children, seriously wounded by the bombings, were hospitalized. I met a Kumbonyana nun. Her name is Sister Pina, Annette, an 80 years old Italian woman, an extraordinary person. Sister Pina said to me, "Angelo, come with me. There is a mother from Gaza who wants to speak to you. Her son just underwent surgery." What happened next deeply moved me. It's very difficult for me to describe what happened after. And I always find it hard to talk about that moment. I told Sister Pina, "Now may not be the right time to visit the child because he has had the surgery." She replied, "Not, come with me. The mother wants to talk with you." That mother thought I was the head of the government, the head of the government of Italy. But I wasn't the prime minister of Italy. And in that moment, I felt like a very, very small man. Very, very small man. In the face of this, of the immense human tragedy of that mother and her child, I walked into the room and I saw this woman holding her 4-year-old child in her arms. The child had lost his leg and was crying out to his mother, and I asked his mother, "Mom, why don't I have my leg? Why? Mother, I want my leg back." I will never forget the desperation of this mother. Never forget in my life. Sorry. Three months ago, I was in the best bank in Ramallah. I also met with Mustafa Barghouti in the West Bank. We witnessed apartheid, the violent occupation of Palestinian lands by settlers and demolition of their homes, a violence that speaks clearly. Israel wants to deport the Palestinians from Palestine to permanently occupy Gaza and the West Bank. The hypocrisy of the Italian government, like that of many others, is complicity. In Parliament, we present a motion to revoke the military agreement between Italy and Israel and to recognize the state of Palestine. Prime Minister Meloni's government rejects our proposal, claiming that this agreement is a tool for dialogue between Italy and Israel. I ask, how is this possible? Military agreement is an instrument of dialogue. We also called for the support at the European level of sanctions against those who have killed over 60,000 people, perhaps is more than 60,000 people, 20,000 of them children, and once again, Prime Minister Meloni said no. According to an independent investigation in Italy, the Italian government sold to Israel 6 tons of ammonium nitrate, a base of substance for making explosives, between November 2023 and March 2025. The Romans used to say, mala tempora curunt, sed peiora parantur. Bad times are upon us, and worse ones are being prepared. We are living through an historical moment marked by the delegitimation of international institutions such as the United Nations, the International Criminal Court, UNRWA, has been accused of terrorism. United Nations rapporteur Francesca Albanese was sanctioned by the United States simply for telling the truth and denouncing the genocide in Gaza. What we are witnessing in the construction of a new geopolitical order based on military power and supremacy, this reckless criminal policy of rearmament will generate profits of the ham industry, but it will also bring war and poverty. Therefore, we have a duty to build a global alliance for Palestine, an alliance for humanity. We must be on the right side. We must be on the right side of the history. Free Palestine. Thank you.
That was Deputy Angelo Bonelli from Italy. At the end of the Global Alliance for Palestine inaugural conference, Dr. Mustafa Barghouti delivered a closing remarks and read the official closing statement of the conference. Let's take a listen.
I was honored by the organizers to read the political statement of this meeting. But before I do that, I will just mention a few comments. First of all, somebody spoke about the so many images we see from Gaza. And of course, I see a lot of them. But you know, sometimes one particular image really breaks your heart. And the one that broke really my heart and put me completely astonished was the scene of a 2-year-old girl who was shot in the abdomen. And if anybody wants to see that image, I'll show it to you. And then the look on her face, somebody was trying to stop the bleeding, and the look on her face, the confusion, the fear, no child ever should go through that. And I think when you see all these images, please don't get used to them. Don't get used to them. Because each case is a person, is a human being. These people are not numbers. Second, I think during this wonderful day, and I really appreciate what the organizers have done so well, we've heard so many experiences, successes, initiatives, and also learning lessons from failures, and lots of lessons to learn from, and that is really appreciated. And we also heard about fantastic and excellent models of cooperation, in particular what you have built here in the United Kingdom, in Britain. This really stands up as a very good example of how coalitions should be built and how they should work together. What this day has proven is that we need such a platform, a global kind of alliance, to unify and coordinate so much good work that is done, and also to exchange experience. I think many of us learned today from each other, from hearing about the other experiences. I think what we saw today is a great amount of variation of so many different activities, but also a wonderful amount of energy in support of Palestine. And I reaffirm what we said in the beginning of this conference, which is the need to attract even more young people, because the young people really bring in a lot of new energy. And some people spoke about simple messages and short messages and so on. That's what we've been trying to do during the last 2 years. And if you can join the so-called, they call it X now, the Twitter we have, I think you will find a lot of daily messages, short messages, specific messages that come from Palestine that you can use in your work. And I think what was said by from the Finnish, by Taina from Finland, is very important. She emphasized that if we hit the mainstream media, we can really influence media everywhere. So that is very informative to me. And it means we should really concentrate on that. One more point about, somebody mentioned about the Israeli opposition to Palestinian struggle, claiming that this is a religious fight. That's something we have to fight to stand up against. And we have to show that this is not true. And I think bringing in here, I think for the organizers to consider bringing in as many, like Frank, many of the Christian groups that are active in solidarity, but in particular Christian groups in Palestine. They are doing wonderful work, and so many churches are participating in that. I think this will put the Palestinian issue in the right direction. Of course, what was said about the success of the struggle in Ireland, in South Africa, and I add to that in Vietnam, gives us hope and gives us optimism. And I think that's the main message that should come out of this conference, a lot of optimism about the future and about the struggle of the Palestinian people. I think what was started today as this global alliance is a great thing that should be continued, we should make sure that it will be successful. And we in Palestine will do everything we can to help all of you in every possible way. Whatever you need from us, please let us know, and we will do it. But I want to ask you, I know it was a short message, I know it was quick, but please do whatever you can to spread the message about Sunday, tomorrow, being a day of hunger strike. It doesn't matter how many people will participate, but it's important that it is known in every country where you are, because this will mean a lot. This will raise the morale of the Palestinian civil society and the people of Gaza. So we would really appreciate efforts to go in that direction. Finally, I want to say something. I want you to know, whatever happens, we as Palestinians will not be broken. Whatever happens, we will not stop struggling. We will not give up. We will not leave our country. And we will succeed. We will overcome with our struggle, but also with your solidarity. This is the main message that should come out and that should be heard. And now, if you allow me, I will read the political statement, the proposed political statement, if you accept it, on behalf of the Global Alliance. On the 26th of July 2025, the inaugural London Conference for Global Alliance for Palestine convened in London, bringing together representatives from over 65 organizations across 25 countries. Political leaders, grassroots movement, and campaigns united in a historic gathering to strengthen global solidarity with the Palestinian struggle. Among the distinguished speakers were Right Honorable Jeremy Corbyn, Jerry Adams, Reverend Frank Ciccani, and Honorable Angelo Bonilli, and myself. At this critical moment in history, as the Palestinian people continue to endure occupation, apartheid, siege, and systematic violation of their fundamental rights, we reaffirm our unwavering commitment to their struggle for freedom, justice, self-determination, and the right of return. We honor the resilience of the Palestinian people, particularly those in Gaza, who face relentless military aggression and a brutal siege. Israel's deliberate targeting of civilians, destruction of vital infrastructure, and use of starvation as a weapon constitutes acts of genocide and ethnic cleansing in clear violation of international law. We stand unequivocally in support of Palestinian rights to resist occupation by all legitimate means recognized under international law. We categorically condemn the policies of collective punishment that impose starvation and deprivation of the Palestinian people. Recognizing the urgency of this moment, we acknowledge that our global solidarity movement must become more unified, better coordinated, and strategically focused to influence international policies, and hold accountable governments and institutions complicit in these crimes. To this end, we proudly announced the formation of the Global Alliance for Palestine, a global coalition of civil society organizations, advocacy campaigns, academic bodies, parliamentarians, and grassroots movements. The alliance will unify and amplify solidarity efforts worldwide, particularly targeting Western governments that enable and sustain Israel's systematic abuses while actively supporting Palestinian liberation and self-determination. The Global Alliance is not in competition with any other coalition who work for Palestine and Palestinian rights. It is found on core principle to strengthen political influence, facilitate cooperation and knowledge sharing, defend the right to solidarity, counter criminalization and censorship of Palestinian advocates, confront legal attacks such as anti-BDS legislation, and challenge the undue influence of lobby networks shaping policies and narratives that dehumanize Palestinians. Grounded in international law and universal human rights, the Global Alliance remains fully independent from governments and political factions, committed to democratic, pluralistic, and accountable action. It complements existing movements by providing a platform for greater coordination and collective impact. We call on all individuals, institutions, and movements committed to justice for Palestine to join the Global Alliance for Palestine and help build a cohesive and powerful international front against occupation, apartheid, genocide, and other war crimes. The Global Alliance for Palestine commits to sustaining and expanding this vital struggle until justice is won and Palestinian liberation and dignity are fully realized. Thank you.
That was Dr. Mustafa Barghouti, Palestinian physician, activist, secretary general, and co-founder of the Palestinian National Initiative, a member of the Palestinian Legislative Council, and president of the Union of Palestinian Medical Relief Committees, delivering the closing remarks and reading the official closing statement of the Global Alliance for Palestine inaugural conference held in London in July 2025. More information about the conference is posted at www.palestine-alliance.org, and we have a link to that on our website, arabvoices.net. You've been listening to Arab Voices, a syndicated radio talk show on dozens of radio stations in the US and Europe since 2002. Our shows are archived online, and you can listen to them by visiting arabvoices.net. And that does it for the show today. Thanks for listening. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. Until we meet next week, peace on earth.